content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the teenmagazine.com and kidspiritonline.com. Our first article today, Beginnings Are a Eulogy for an End. And this article was written by Manoor Ali Pervaiz. Individuals are shaped by defining moments and recollections of different experiences throughout their journeys through life. Their minds are programmed to set long-term goals they dream of achieving. But what happens when the end is near, when the battle is almost won, and their dream is about to become a reality? What thoughts run through their minds? What do they desire next? From a very young age, I have seen the seniors graduate from my prestigious institute. The first graduation parade I remember is from kindergarten. With streamers in her hands, little Manoor watched the unfamiliar faces in white run through the gates, grinning, singing, and dancing, stepping foot into their school for the last time as students. Although I didn't have an idea of what was happening then, apart from having heard the word graduation, it became my dream to one day be one of those young ladies embarking on the next voyage of life, a pearl leaving its shell to enter a whole new world. Years have passed since. More graduations followed. Soon, unfamiliar faces turned into familiar ones, people I had heard of, those I had worked with, acquaintances, and friends. However, my dream of graduating stayed steadfast in its place as one of my deepest desires. With the passage of time, I failed to realize that I was slowly becoming one of the older girls. Now, I am just one academic year away from my own graduation, and some of my closest friends graduate in a few months. I no longer have to wear a uniform to school or be there for the whole day. I find myself at a crossroads. I attach new meanings to the songs played at the graduation parade. I listen more closely to their words. Leave me to my destiny. I have waited patiently, sang Right Said Fred. This lyric stands out because it not only brings feelings of nostalgia, but also emphasizes the work it took for me to get to where I am now. My peers and I studied, passed tests, participated in competitions, and worked together as we grew to get to where we are today. We worked to one day achieve the desire birthed in our hearts since we saw our first graduation parade, to fulfill our dream. Our goals in life motivate us to work towards a better destiny, to achieve what we want. This motivation comes from our deeper desire to meet the bar set by the adults in our lives. This song brings me joy, not only because I associate it with so many memories over the past 16 years of my life, but also because I associate it with the hope of one day reaching a place in my journey that I have dreamed of for years. When I was younger, I used to wonder what happened at the graduation dinner after the parade. My thoughts would run wild, coming up with the most elaborate ideas. But now I know what happens. At first, every hurdle that I would have to face seemed so complex, so overwhelming. Now that I have overcome so many of them, the ones that once seemed impossible to achieve seem so straightforward in comparison to the rest of my life. The dream was always to graduate, but now that it's not so far away, I have mixed emotions. The joy and excitement are there, but they are overpowered by fear of the unknown. The dream itself is a final goodbye to being a child, marking the end of the first part of my learning journey. Up until now, everything in life has been planned for me, even my dreams shaped by my education. My deepest desire, something that has been a huge part of my life since I gained consciousness, is now arriving. Now I realize there is life beyond graduation, a life I haven't thought about, one that isn't planned for me by adults looking out for me, a life in which I will be the captain of my own ship. I have to make my own decisions, set my own desires, and work to achieve my dreams and goals myself. The thought of having control is so much more exhilarating when you don't know what it fully entails. My dreams and desires have now morphed from wanting to graduate to wanting school to last a little bit longer, to get into a college, get a job. The list is endless. My deepest desire has gone from wanting to be one of the older girls to wanting to be one of the younger ones, a perfectly full circle. But alas, that is not how life works. I only have one more year of school left, and there is nothing I can do about it. Time does not stop. I will never be able to go back to being that little 5-year-old girl with the world in the palm of her hands. I will never be able to relive the moment I saw those girls run through the gates, when my eyes began to twinkle and I formed a memory that drove me for so many years and will drive me for one more. However, I can do something better. In May 2024, I can sing the lyrics, "Tonight we are young, so let's set the world on fire," with pride, knowing that I lived out little Manor's dream, and I have so much more to look forward to. And our next article, a review of the 2014 adaptation of Annie. And this article was written by Nubiana Smiley. Annie, director Will Gluck, Sony Pictures, 2014. Running time, 118 minutes. Rating, 4.5 stars. Can a foster child's dream come true? Is there always hope at the end of the tunnel? In this article, I will help you answer those questions with my review of the 2014 film adaptation of Annie, directed by Will Gluck. Annie is a foster child living in an apartment in New York with multiple other girls who are under the care of a promiscuous, emotionally detached, and manipulative young woman who fosters them all for her own financial benefits. Annie tries to have a positive outlook on life throughout the movie, which is emphasized through her interactions with the people she comes across every day, all while being uncertain about who her parents are and when they are coming back for her. Understandably, Annie's circumstances could get her down, but she remains hopeful, holding tightly onto her desire to have her parents one day. As the movie progresses, a wealthy man by the name of William Stacks saves Annie from being hit by a van when she is running across the road trying to save a stray dog from two young boys. Annie and William become inseparable, building a strong connection, which is meant to strengthen William's outward image as he is campaigning to be mayor. Yet they connect with each other and fulfill the parent-child bond they both evidently need. As Annie is assisting with the growth of William, she is very fortunate to be taken out of her toxic situation to live with him, experiencing the life she dreamt of by having her own room, people who serve parental roles, and many opportunities. Nonetheless, a movie isn't a movie without a plot twist, and without giving away any spoilers, let's just say an ill-intentioned man working with William tries to deceive both Annie and William. With his obvious care and love for Annie, William earns her trust again, and the movie ends happily with Annie's dream being fulfilled. The plot of Annie is cohesive, in my opinion, with each event leading into the next, gradually building to a tense pinnacle, which I won't spoil, and then decreasing in tension to end the movie off nicely. I also absolutely loved the soundtrack and the songs because of the rhythm and percussion used, which makes the songs lively, exciting, and upbeat, not to mention extremely catchy. I especially enjoyed the songs "It's a Hard Knock Life" and "Tomorrow" because of the passion within them, but also the sort of layering and echoing of words that adds to the feel. Furthermore, my liking of the soundtrack increased because of the messages in the songs. For example, in "Tomorrow," Annie sings, "When I'm stuck with a day that's gray and lonely, I just stick up my chin and grin and say, 'The sun will come out tomorrow,'" displaying her hope and optimism for the next day. I feel this is an outlook on life that everyone can adopt to make life a bit more enjoyable, even when you meet adversity face to face. Tomorrow is a song I'll be singing when I'm down going forward. The character Annie, played by Quvenzhané Wallace, starts off as a hopeful child, but by the end, she transforms into a confident, happy, and secure young girl with her dream of having parents fulfilled. William Stax, played by Jamie Foxx, is presented as work-oriented and quite desensitized to his own emotions. However, as the movie progresses, William sees the importance of relationships and the people around him, resulting in a healthy balance of work, enjoying life, and the gift that is Annie. Grace, played by Rose Byrne, is William's seemingly professional female assistant who supports him in his campaign to be mayor. She begins as an overthinker, in my opinion, consumed by her profession and slightly in denial regarding her true feelings and intentions for William. Towards the end of the movie, with prompting from Annie, we see her embrace her vulnerability and be transparent with William, in addition to serving in a maternal role for Annie. Miss Hannigan, played by Cameron Diaz, is, as I alluded in the beginning, promiscuous, emotionally detached from herself and the foster children in her care, and manipulative. She is seen flirting with men, being cruel and callous to the girls she cares for in every way, including degrading them with her words, and even scheming with the ill-intentioned man against Annie and William's relationship. But when she realizes the wrong she has done throughout the movie leading up to this point, she has a subsequent change of heart and aids in setting everything right again, displaying a complete change in character morally. Guy, played by Bobby Cannavale, is the ill-intentioned man I've mentioned previously. To begin with, he is depicted as supportive of William, having nothing but his best interests at heart, and constantly finding opportunities to build his image and positive reputation. But we are then exposed to his cunning disposition when he only considers himself and his gain from exploiting both Stax and Annie. The movie made me experience a lot of emotions. At points, I felt on edge due to the tension that built up within the movie. At others, I felt compassionate and empathetic because of what Annie was going through. At the end of the movie, I felt inspired to have a more positive and tenacious outlook on life, as Annie did, reaffirming that giving up should always be the last option in the face of adversity. Not only was I inspired by Annie's attitude, but I was also inspired to see people like me in the leading roles. This showed me, and can show anyone, that we can do anything we put our minds to. This great movie relates to this issue's theme of dreams and desires, as Annie almost had hers destroyed, and she never once gave up on them or allowed anyone to diminish them. She stuck to her dream of having her parents with her, and eventually was granted exactly that. Maybe not in the way she thought, but nonetheless, her dreams were fulfilled. Overall, I rate Annie 4.5 stars out of 5 because of the high-quality nature of the movie in its entirety, as well as its beautiful message to stay optimistic and always have hope in your dreams and whatever your desires are. And our third article from KidSpiritOnline.com, "Eat Your Food or Else the Witch Eats You." And this article was written by Ankar Borde. I still remember the way my grandma narrated the stories of the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, some of the most popular mythological legends, when we used to sleep on the roof on hot summer nights. There was something about the stories which excited my soul, or maybe my grandma was just so skilled in her narration of these legends. These ancient stories usually began with a king, Some bad guys might trouble the good king and try to destabilize the administration. The villains torture the good people. Finally, the story usually introduces a savior who fights the nasty guys. In the end, the good king typically wins the war because of his altruistic deeds. These stories were awesome and always helped whenever I did not feel like sleeping. The stories also indirectly motivated me to be a good boy, like Rama of the Ramayana, a prince who had sacrificed his kingdom and spent 14 years in exile just to fulfill his father's request. He was honest, polite, and obedient. The stories reflected what an ideal human is like: honest, polite, positive, and kind. A human whose presence makes everyone feel comfortable. They also created a mindset that helped me differentiate the good from the bad. These stories revolved around notions of good and evil. They spoke of karma, consequences, and God. I remember the way I was told about the evil child-eater witch who used to kidnap the children who did not finish their dinner or listen to their parents, and the story of King Harishchandra, an honest and virtuous king who was known for his good deeds and whose tales are still present in our English books. King Harishchandra had sacrificed his kingdom, his family, and his only son just to provide the sage Vishwamitra with compensation, dakshina, for disturbing his meditation. That was a pretty complicated concept for a fifth grader like me back then. That was when I was a child. Now, since I have started to interpret and learn the meaning of life, I am able to better understand why we were told such stories. It was all for one sole purpose: to nurture us and to develop a sense of disgust when we thought of doing something bad. The stories seemed to create a barrier that prohibited me from getting into bad things. Every story reflected how evil people suffer in the end, and the mere thought of those tortures ensures I do not follow the unholy path of negativity and rage. These stories helped to encourage good manners. They infused honesty, confidence, bravery, positivity, and many more qualities in me. History lessons are boring indeed, but when we combine them with a good storyline, our perspective suddenly changes. The historic events now look like volumes of a story and begin to feel interesting. The reason behind this is the way one communicates with others. Stories can be described as a medium of encouraging communication, where good beliefs and good manners are transferred from the mind of the narrator to the mind of the listener. The stories remain longer in our minds than a boring philosophical lecture on life. For me, stories are an essential way of learning life lessons. They give me a literal idea of what exactly good and bad are, and what happens when I make certain choices. The skill to distinguish between potentially harmful and safe things can be hard to understand. I think stories have helped me to master it. These ancient mythological legends have also helped me to understand the state of true peace and satisfaction, such as that which King Rantideva received when he donated his own meal to a hungry person, or like what the sage Dadichi felt after sacrificing his own body to provide the gods with bones to make an immortal weapon to win the war. Apart from gaining extraordinary and exquisite wisdom through stories, I have felt a wave of creativity flow through me. I now have started to perceive my environment in a very different way. The images of the blind woodcutter who suffered due to cutting down trees flash before me when I try to pluck a leaf off a plant just for some fun. The stories of the Pancha Tantra have improved my life as well. These are engrossing stories related to nature and animals. These fables have taught me some great values and morals, which would have been pretty hard to learn on my own without any painful lessons. Stories are magical, indeed. Ancient tales and stories have been a great torch that have guided me and given this unshaped clay of my life the shape of a well-built pot, which stores values and life lessons to be passed on further. The tales of the heroes of the past have influenced me to mimic them and behave like a hero, honest, full of confidence, and ready to sacrifice anything. The stories have taught me how to resist evil and hail good deeds. Passed from generation to generation in my community, they have helped us all to live a stable and peaceful life, one which has a concrete purpose with well-known potential harms. Desires, they can be considered a deadly factor of destruction that consume every bit of happiness out of a human being. But when one is able to dig in and explore beneath the surface, we find that desires and urges are one of the major life forces which are able to give direction and provide what we call an aim to one's life. Just like a goldsmith turns a heap of gold into a beautiful ornament, the stories, experiences, and incidents I have witnessed have shaped my life and helped me to grow the desire to follow the path of honesty and to be a sterling human whose presence is admired. I feel as if there are some important life lessons engraved somewhere inside these stories. These are then passed from generation to generation to maintain the equilibrium of our human minds and, ultimately, to provide enlightenment. And our last article today from theteenmagazine.com, The Third Culture Kid Phenomenon. And this article was written by Prachi Agrawal. For centuries, a growing hatred has arisen of mutations, freaks of nature. From Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, a gruesome miscellany of human limbs and monstrous emotions, to modern hybrid offspring of wild creatures, mutants are observed, studied, feared. Is a TCK any different? In the chaos and entropy of the 19th century, amidst war and revolutions, the world's most complex and intricate domino effect has been kickstarted. The cultural diaspora, decades of international social, political, and economic turbulence or prosperity pushed young families away from their homelands, causing them to explore and adapt to alien cultures in faraway lands. These people would be recognized as the first wave of immigrants, pioneers that braved foreign waters to spread their roots all over the world, the first of many generations to add to the country's biculturalism. Commemorated and celebrated, they would go down in history, oblivious to the mutation they've created, a cultural, legal, and ethnic confusion, a third culture kid. While the pioneers pioneered, their children most certainly did not have that luxury. Instead, they faced a brand new battlefield, uncharted and ruthless. While every child's mind underwent a turbulent inner war of self-identity and self-confidence during their adolescent years, TCK's mind plummeted into even more turmoil. Where did they belong? Who were they? They weren't confident in their culture like their parents, nor accepted into society by their peers. Mutants, neither this nor that. But as Jewel L. Gomez, a brilliant queer author of African and Iowa descent, a TCK herself, once said, "A home isn't always the house we live in. It's also the people we choose to surround ourselves with." Her words beautifully encompassed the one thing these mutants needed to fully find themselves, to find the place they so desperately yearned to belong to. The mutants found each other. They found a community that empowered, uplifted, and educated, and began to realize their power and potential. Through sharing their unique experiences of estrangement and racism, they began to find that these struggles were common. Problems were halved, and solutions were devised. As a TCK myself, I can testify that the places I've lived and grown up are scattered over three majestic continents. Their culture seeping into my veins have altered and reconstructed me and millions of other TCKs worldwide. There is something profoundly freeing in being unable to conform to a singular culture. It has allowed us to comprehend the incomprehensible concept of the diaspora, its convoluted intricacies, its vastness. We have never been able to conform to a singular accent, devote our patriotism to a singular nation, or call a singular country our home, simply because it would not be true if we did. The customs, ideas, practices, and morals we hold within us were born millennia ago in the minds of some of the most legendary philosophers and laureates, and tribes and leaders and pandits and saints all over the world. We are a patchwork of all of their legacies, the product of what could have happened if Plato met Buddha. There is poetry in the assimilation and collaboration of cultures. Through globalization and the rise of immigration, more cultural barriers are dissolving and integrating, creating a plethora of diverse new ideas and beliefs. Children growing up in these new cultures are experiencing a truly interconnected world, a world of collaboration and unity. It has been scientifically proven that TCKs are inclined to pursue international career paths, to continue traveling after their education, and thrive in multicultural settings, cities, workplaces, universities, etc. TCKs possess a multicultural perspective on the world, reflecting on all aspects of their lives. Our brains are almost hardwired to view the world as one, to love the world as one. So maybe we are mosaics, not mutants, of the purest form of the human experience, culture. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.